オフィシャル K-1 パッキャスト K-1 バトルキャスト、
あたしやった
You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews! And now, your hosts, Michael Chavarro and Jonathan Scheer!
It's good night, Irene!
Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Chavarro. Great to be with you on another episode of the official podcast of K1 Worldwide. This is K1 Battlecast. I'm coming at you from Melbourne, Australia. I am joined, as always, by my verbal sparring partner in Tokyo, Japan, Jonathan Scheer. G'day, Jonathan. And let me say something I've been waiting to say for a long time, brother. It is fight week.
Oh yeah, Michael, it is fight week. I am so excited. You know what? I could actually say that I'm bristling with excitement, and that is not a term that I use lightly.
Mate, I am bristling with excitement too, because history will be made this weekend. Saturday, June 29, it happens. The first K1 World Grand Prix qualifying event in 14 years takes place in Sarajevo. 8 men will enter, only one will survive to take a step towards the K1 World Grand Prix final to be held in Tokyo on December 14. Extraordinary, Jonathan. We have waited so long for this, and finally it's happening, and we've gotten word from Sarajevo that all the fighters have arrived, everyone's in good nick, and everyone is looking to murder each other on Saturday night to book that golden ticket to the K1 World Grand Prix on December 14. It doesn't get any bigger, Jonathan.
Well, it really does not get any bigger because these guys are the heavyweights, so they're the largest fighters to begin with. But because it's been so many years since the last qualifying round, super excited. But I gotta know, Michael, who is the fighter that you have slated to win the whole shebang?
Yeah, good question, Jonathan. You know, we ran through the combatants in the K1 Sarajevo on our last episode, and I did make mention that I thought that Thomas Ron, if he is on with his vast wealth of experience, I mean, a guy who's beaten Alexei Ignashov twice and Errol Zimmerman, he's beaten Claudio Estrada, who is in the same side of the bracket in this draw as Thomas Ron. I did mention that I think that Ron could be a genuine favorite if he's well prepared. But also, it's really hard to go against someone like Claudio Estrada just because he has the most recent K1 tournament experience. I mean, he was in that 30th anniversary openweight Grand Prix tournament last September in Tokyo, where he made it all the way through to the final against Lutsar, who eventually beat him. But before that, he was looking mightily impressive. Now, I did have a chance to catch up with Claudio earlier in the week, and I did ask him some questions about his preparation. He said, "Voice, my preparation is good. I can't wait to be back in there and fight again." Said he had a long preparation, had a long training camp ahead of this one. I asked him if there's anyone in this tournament other than himself who he thinks is a tournament favorite. You know, who do we put the money on? If it's not on Claudio, who do we put it on? And he couldn't pick it. Claudio could not pick it. He said, everyone in the tournament, you can literally throw a blanket over them. It'll be that close. And he did have one message though, and it was for a fighter not in this tournament, but for a fighter he doesn't like. And there's a little bit of a spin to this answer. This is juicy, Jonathan. And I know, Jonathan, you're going to predict the answer to this one, who he had a message for. But Claudio did tell me, "I've got a message for Sina Karimian." He said, "Sima, I'm coming to 95 kilos. See you soon." Now, Claudio Estrada calling out Sina Karimian at 95 kilos. Jonathan, here's the twist. On Saturday night, on worldwide pay-per-view, on our English broadcast, the man commentating with me will be Sina Karimian. How is that going to go down? What is going to happen in the commentary booth on Saturday night when I'm by Sina Karimian's side, the bad boy, when we're commentating Claudio Estrada, and Estrada just called Sina out at 95 kilos? I've got to say, though, Claudio shouldn't be looking ahead to Sina Karimian. It's fine to have Sina in your sights. He's got to concentrate on this tournament. And I also asked Claudio, Jonathan, the big problem, of course, when he fought in last September's Openweight Grand Prix tournament were the legs. We've always said how Claudio has a thick upper body. The hands are cannonballs. If he tags you with those hands, you know, he's going to knock your block off. He's going to ring your bell. But it's the legs of Claudio. They're a little skinny. Can they take the punishment? Especially if he needs to go three fights over three rounds each. That's extraordinary punishment. And he said to me, Michael, I can make it to the final. Even if my legs are injured, I can make it to the final. And he's confident. He's confident of winning this tournament in Sarajevo and booking his place for December 14 in the final. He came back again to rematching Sina Karimian, taking care of business there. And also, he brought up a rematch with Lutsar. He said he also wants to go to 95 kilos to exact revenge on Lutsar. So I like the fact that Estrade is setting up these challenges for himself and these great challenges for us to discuss and debate and pontificate on that may happen later on this year. And I think he needs to be the favorite in this tournament, depending how he goes against Ron, if he'll have Thomas Ron's number, should they meet in the semifinal. Other side of the draw, though, I've got to go with Tosic as the home crowd guy because he'll have the crowd behind him, but also Ivan Bartek. Do not forget about Ivan Bartek. Bartek is a destroyer, and I think he's a guy that could go all the way. And when we were speaking to Thomas Ron on this podcast last week, he also mentioned that Bartek has to be a favorite to take out this tournament. Now, Jonathan, there is also word we were mentioning last week how there is one more fighter to come into the eight-man in Sarajevo that has now been announced. It is Balint Ladova from Hungary, a name that most people probably don't know, but I do know Balint Ladova. The guy used to be, he was a prodigy. He was a teenager prodigy. I remember it was, I think it was like 5 years ago. He went to the Muay Thai Championships at 91 kilos, and this guy swept. I mean, he cleaned up with so many medals. It was held in Antalya, and he was 17 years old at the time, so it must have been, it might have been 7 years ago, but he was cleaning up, and there were so many big things being talked about this young guy. Again, his name is Balint Ladova, and what he would be capable of in the future, and so much success was predicted for him. Haven't seen a lot of him since that. So I'm not quite sure what happened along the way, but I am glad that Jevad Potarak and the powers that be in Sarajevo have gotten this Muay Thai gun into this tournament. And I think that he really does shake it up if given the opportunity, if he can bring some of that form that made him this teenage prodigy. We're going to see something special. It's a good addition to a very strong eight-man lineup that we're going to see in Sarajevo. And once again, just to go through those fighters we are going to see, let me run through the card here. It's going to be Kadir Yildirim versus Thomas Ron in the quarterfinals. Hard one to pick, but I do like Thomas Ron for this one. Yildirim is 17-4 record. Thomas Ron, probably the most experienced in this tournament. He's at 110 fights, and he goes way back almost 20 years of fighting. Also on that side of the draw, Claudio Estrade. I mentioned how big Claudio could be the favorite here. He has 60 wins. He has that massive 33 knockouts, so more than a 50% KO ratio for Claudio. He takes on Nidal Baciri. Baciri is a gun. Okay, he is a gun. He is 15-3. He is going to be 4 years younger than Claudio. He's going to give up a little bit of weight, I feel, to Claudio, but he's going to have height over Claudio. It's going to be a banger, but I think Claudio can get the job done there. But Baciri is going to be hard. Balint Ladova, as I said, he'll take on Miroslav Vujovic. That'll be on the second side of the draw, the other bracket. Vujovic has only 10 fights, so there won't be tremendous experience with him, and Balint should be a decent contest. And as I said, the one to really look out for, the one that could be the barn burner, the show stealer of the tournament in the quarterfinal rounds, is going to be Ivan Bartek taking on Danilo Tosic. Tosic is from Bosnia and Herzegovina. He is their sole representative. He will bring the house down. He's got 40 fights, 30-10 record, taking on Bartek. Bartek has 67 fights, 45-19 record, and three draws. Bartek is one of the older guys, if not the oldest second to Thomas Rohn in this tournament. He is, what was he, born in 1989. And Tosic, as I look up his statistics, born in 1993. So they're not young spring chickens, these two, but you've got Slovakia versus Bosnia. You've got that traditional sporting rivalry between the two countries. And like I said and Thomas Rohn said, keep your eyes on Bartek because he could be a potential dark horse. Now, folks, once again, myself, Sina Karimian, in commentary this Saturday night. If you're watching in Australia, in New Zealand, in Japan, it's going to be early Sunday morning. Jonathan, give us the broadcast details of where fans around the world can watch the K1 Sarajevo.
Well, I'll put all the information in the show notes, but you can check out the show on Triller. You can also check it out on Stream Ticket. The details will be in the show notes, but I am super excited for this, Michael. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I can't wait either. We'll see you all on Sunday morning in Japan, Australia, New Zealand, etc. Saturday night throughout Europe and the rest of the world for K1 World GP Sarajevo. Okay, folks, we continue K1 Battlecast. And, you know, over the last 2 months, we've been deep diving into the eight men who will compete on July 7 in the K1 Max Final in Tokyo. It is shaping up to be a terrific tournament. Eight will enter, one will survive. To be crowned the K1 Max champion, of course, we know that Buakaw was announced as the wild card. We deep dived into Buakaw over the last 2 weeks with some expert comments from, you know, Israel Adesanya's striking coach, Mike Angove, from the Doyen himself, Steve Wright, from Matt Lucas, US journalist. If you missed those last two episodes with those interviews, do download them, go back and listen to them. But who is the man that Buakaw is taking on? He was meant to take on Ouyang Feng of China. And Feng was considered by myself and most others the favorite to take out the Max, being the K1 super welterweight world champion, demolishing Pascal Struth in the final 16 in March, a guy who is seemingly invincible. But then, as Jonathan announced in our news segment last week, Ouyang Feng out due to a rib injury sustained in training. So in comes Stoyan Koprivlensky. And this is a guy I really like. And let's do a deep dive right now on Stoyan. As we said, he enters on short notice to take on Buakaw, but he is trained up, he is prepared. Stoyan was scheduled to fight in the K1 Fighting Network Romania show, but that fell through. So he stays in camp to prepare for Buakaw. So it's not as if he's been, you know, offered this fight and he's out of shape and he's been sitting on the couch and doing nothing. The guy's been training for a fight that fell through 2 weeks ago. So he is ready. Before I deep dive into the technical aspects of Stoyan, I need to mention the big ace up his sleeve for this tournament, and that is his coach, Big Mike Passanier. You talk about a man who knows K1 tournaments, K1 rule set, K1 strategy inside and out, and you talk about Big Mike. Mike is the man behind so many of the men in K1 and Dutch kickboxing history. Big Mike crafted Bader Hari into the killer Bader Hari was. Bader was a two-time K1 Grand Prix runner-up. He was a K1 World Heavyweight Champion. And we know all the other accolades that Hari amassed in his career. That was Big Mike guiding him towards those accolades. Bader Hari may be the most well-known of Mike's champion fighters, but there are many more. You're going to know these names, folks. Melvin Manoff, Arta Kashenko, Jory Mess. Very notably, for our purposes of K1 Max, Mirthal Grunert. In 2012, Mirthal won an awesome K1 Max tournament in Greece where he defeated Yasuhiro Kido, Mike Zambides, in Greece, and Arta Kashenko, prime Kashenko. That was with Big Mike Passanier pulling the strings. So Mike knows what it takes to get fighters through tournaments. He knows how to prepare them mentally, physically, even spiritually for this greatest test of skill and endurance, because many trainers don't. They don't know how to guide a fighter through a tournament. There's a big difference, folks, between fighting one fight on a night and fighting three fights on a night. K1 is next level. Preparation for a K1 tournament is next level. There is no trainer in the corner of any K1 Max fighter on July 7 who knows the K1 tournament terrain as well as Big Mike Passanier. okay? It's like going into a football tournament or a football season where you've got the right manager who can take you through an entire season, not just win you one match. It's like when Sir Alex Ferguson was in charge of Manchester United, how successful were Man U? Incredibly successful. Why? Because Ferguson knew the game, had the experience, knew how to get the best out of his players for an entire season, not just for a single match. It's the same with Big Mike. He knows how to get the best out of his fighters for tournament situations. He knows the rules of K1 intricately, intimately. He knows how he can push the envelopes. He knows the mind games that can be played at the weigh-ins, at the press conferences, at the the pre-fight photos where the fighters are passing by each other backstage. The things you fans don't see. All this time, Big Mike is playing the game. I've seen him do it with Cena. I've seen him do it with Melvin. I've seen him do it so many times with Bada. There is an air of intimidation around Big Mike Passanier that I think travels from Mike onto the opponent that his guy's fighting. There's a reason they call Big Mike Passanier Big Mike, because he's freaking big. The dude's massive. And just being next to him and his booming voice and the way he looks at you and the way that I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like an opponent will look at Big Mike in his opponent's corner, and the way Big Mike looks at that guy, it's like, I already know you. I already know what you're going to do. So there's this sort of intimidation factor that comes with having Big Mike in your corner. And like I said, there is going to be no other trainer on July 7th. You know, Denge Silva's trainer, Vodong's trainer, Zora's trainer, Majinski's trainer. Okay, even Buakaw's team, none of them on July 7, none of these guys is going to have the experience in K1 that Big Mike does. It's a big ace up the sleeve here of Stoyan. Mike will have turned his attention to Buakaw and studied Buakaw and broken him down into a digestible format for Stoyan to attack on July 7. And Mike has seen Buakaw firsthand for almost 20 years. There is nothing Buakaw will offer that Big Mike hasn't seen before and isn't telling Stoyan about. And Mike knows what happens to aging fighters. He knows how to expose them. He's been in the corner of aging fighters. He knows what can go wrong come fight night when you've been competing for over 20 years and you're over 40 years old. And Mike will be downloading all this information for Stoyan to capitalize on. If there is a chink in Buakaw's armor, and if it is to do with Buakaw's age, with the wear and tear on Buakaw's bodies over the year, and how to expose those chinks, how to expose and capitalize and exploit that wear and tear, Mike Passanier has found it. And he's told Stoyan about it. It's not often I highlight a trainer as being such an important part of the equation, but that's why I'm doing it. Because in the case of Stoyan Koprivlensky, his trainer Mike Passanier is a massive, massive part of the equation for success. So let's dive into Stoyan now. And he just celebrated his 30th birthday. It was June 21. So he's going to be 12 years younger than Buakaw. He gives up over 250 fights experience to Buakaw. But hey, everyone in this tournament, everyone in the world almost gives up experience to Buakaw. Stoyan is 5 centimeters taller than Buakaw. And Stoyan has never fought a Thai. Just keep that in the back of your mind. This is foreign territory for Stoyan. Sure, he has fought some great names, but he's never fought anyone the caliber of Buakaw. Even at 42, Buakaw is a threat to anyone in this max. Again, listen to last week's show with the great doyen of worldwide kickboxing, that famous historian Steve Wright, and his thoughts on Buakaw. Listen to our episode from 2 weeks ago, and you'll hear Israel Adesanya's striking coach Mike Angove talk about how dangerous Buakaw still is. The biggest weapon Stoyan brings to this fight, as opposed to Buakaw's original opponent, Ouyang Feng, is going to be the element of surprise and movement. Although Feng would have probably stood toe-to-toe with Buakaw and tested his strength against the legend, Stoyan can't do that. He just can't. Stoyan needs to be on his bike. He needs to show Buakaw things that Buakaw won't anticipate. And mind you, everyone knows Buakaw. They would have studied Buakaw, but Buakaw's only having 2 weeks to study Stoyan. Okay, and Stoyan's going to offer different stuff than Ouyang Feng would have. Stoyan's not going to stand in front of him. At least I hope he's not going to stand in front of him. He needs to show Buakaw things that Buakaw won't expect. And much of that needs to be kickboxing. Okay, Stoyan needs to show the Muay Thai megastar a kickboxing repertoire in the hopes of scoring, moving, and surprising Buakaw. Stoyan doesn't have the hands of Ouyang Feng. He's not a knockout guy with his boxing. In fact, I think that of all seven knockouts in Stoyan's career, only one has come from his hands. It was a liver shot on a Russian back in like 2015. Doesn't really matter. The other KOs have all come via kicks. That's not to say Stoyan can't box. He can box wonderfully. But his boxing is not going to stop Buakaw. In the words of the great Denis Alexiou, you have to use the hands to set up the legs and the legs to set up the hands. Boom. That's what Stoyan needs to do. Use his boxing to set up his legs because his legs are weaponized. He's not going to hurt Buakaw with the leg kicks. But if he can catch Buakaw with a head kick, Buakaw is in for a rough night. Stoyan is the most flexible person in this K1 lineup. Honestly, it was something that Big Mike showed me last time when I met Stoyan in March when we were doing the photo shoot. And Mike said, hey, Mikey, you got to see how flexible Stoyan is. And he got Stoyan to raise his head like Van Damme style over his head. The guy is so flexible. He needs to employ that flexibility to work those round kicks to the head. Buakaw's only been knocked out once in his career. That was way back in 2008 against Sato, who KO'd him with a hook. People forget, Buakaw is incredibly hard to knock out. You know, if you're thinking dude's 42, he's going to come in here and he's going to get KO'd, yeah, well, you might want to think again. Stoyan doesn't want to hunt for the knockout, however, but if it's there, it's there. What I think Stoyan needs to do on July 7 is move. As I said, be on his bike. Let Buakaw come to him. Try to drain as much of Buakaw's energy as he can. Draw Buakaw into deep water in the third round. Use the reach, hit the legs, move. Jab, move. Punch combinations, move. Head kicks, move. Stoyan cannot throw and stay still. He's got to move, 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 move. Constant footwork, constant angles. He needs to be on the balls of his feet. Buakaw's going to be the more flat-footed, trying to walk him down. And the deeper the fight goes, the more Stoyan needs to frustrate Buakaw and be that elusive, Vaseline-covered Bulgarian eel that Buakaw just can't catch. The crowd in Japan is going to be going nuts for Buakaw, and that's going to play into Stoyan's advantage. The more he can frustrate Buakaw, the more Buakaw will get desperate to appease the crowd, the more chance Buakaw has of leaving himself open for a head kick. Most of all, though, Stoyan has to listen to his corner. Big Mike is vocal. He likes to guide his fighters through every situation, and Stoyan has to adhere to Mike. Let Mike be his tour guide, because that is the only way that Stoyan has any chance of winning. Let me tell you, if he listens to Big Mike, if Stoyan is smart, if he plays to his strengths, which is movement, scoring, and high kicks, and if he doesn't get suckered into Buakaw's game, if he can disrupt Buakaw's rhythm, which is so important, so important to disrupt Buakaw's rhythm, that's key. You can't let Buakaw set the metronome. If Stoyan can do all this, he stands a very real chance of defeating a man who grew up idolizing. And I'll tell you, folks, I tell you now, I chose Stoyan Koprolvensky as my favorite before the final 16. He was eliminated by Muzhinsky. It was a great fight by Muzhinsky. totally deserved victory, knocked down Stoyan in the final round. But if Stoyan gets past Buakaw, sky's the limit. He could go all the way. Let's see what he brings on July 7. Jonathan, I know you're a fan of Stoyan Koprolevsky as well. And, you know, it's doable here to beat Buakaw, to get Buakaw out in the quarterfinal. What are your thoughts?
Well, in many ways, the fight of Koprolevsky versus Buakaw is kind of like the final in the very first quarterfinal. So it's, you know, there's going to be just a ton of expectation, but just a ton of action as well. I mean, I cannot expect that Buakaw and Stoyan are going to try to draw this out because they got two other fights to fight that night. And they only hurt their chances and help everyone else if they draw this out. But I'm curious, there's a different way that this fight could have been arranged. And K1 doesn't use this. They use the draw system, as you know. But Michael, what's your opinion? If you had the opportunity to seed this, if you were the one that was in charge of which fighter would go where, which fighter would be ranked, how, who would you choose for what seed and why?
Yeah, okay, that's a really good question. And some that I've, you know, a question, Jonathan, I've given a lot of thought to. So, okay, let me seed the K1 Max tournament as I see it. We'll start at the bottom. We'll start at number 8. And when I say the bottom, I don't mean this guy is the worst because, honestly, this is such a tight lineup. There is barely anything separating a lot of these guys, particularly with Ouyang Feng out of the tournament. Number 8, though, needs to be, for me, Viktor Akhmov. I just don't know enough about Viktor. He had a wonderful, wonderful knockout of the night performance in the final 16, that spinning back fist that has been the subject of highlight reels. It's got millions of views on social media. It was wonderful. And Victor's a guy who I think can strategize. He's got that cerebral thinking brain about him that he can break down opponents. And no doubt he is right now doing his homework on his opponent for July 7, breaking down, seeing what chinks may be in the armor of Romano Buckboard. But that said, I just don't think the experience is there. And he could prove me wrong, but you're asking me for my seeds, so I'm going 8th seed, Viktor Akhmov. 7th seed, Kasper Mazinski. It's another case of we don't know enough about him. Wonderful performance to take out Stoyan in the final 16, drop Stoyan. Showed a really good tight guard after he loosened up a little bit. He came out a little rigid at the start, did Kasper. Once he started free-flowing, he's gritty, he's determined, he's fighting for his family, for his young, you know, his young baby. There's a lot for him to fight for. But again, the experience of, you know, the final 16 was his first ever time on the big, big stage. Before that, a relative unknown. No one in the world really knew who Kasper was. He could upset, but I put him as my 7th seed. 6th seed, I know this is going to raise some eyebrows. It's Darryl Verdonk. I was impressed with Verdonk and his win in the final 16, but man, it just wasn't too much of a test for him. His experience, it's 15 fights, 12-3 record, 8 knockouts. The knockouts are there. It's a high KO ratio. He reminds us a little of Albert Krauss, who's been a training partner of his for a long time, a sparring partner of his. But I just can't put him any higher up on my seeded list. He's one I really struggle with here, Jonathan, because I want to put him higher, but there are guys that I think deserve to be higher in my seed. So Darryl Verdonk at number 6. Number 5, Stoyan Koprolevsky. Some people may say I'm too high on Stoyan. Maybe. Like I said, I had him as a favorite in March 16. Our director, Sasaki-san, asked me, Michael, who do you think's going to win? And I said Stoyan, and he got beaten by Mazinski. He takes on Buakaw this time. It's tough. It's hard. I still like this guy. He's prepared. He was training for the fight in Romania. He's had a long camp. He just added to the camp. He's got Big Mike in his corner. That's a huge deal. I have Stoyan as my 5th seed. Top 4 now. Top 4 seeds. So it's out of Zora, Buakaw, Romano, Denge Silva. 4th seed, Romano Buckboard. I like this guy. I like this guy a lot. He's got the pedigree. He's a Surinamese. We know the Surinamese pedigree in K1 over the years. Remy Benjaski, Melvin Manuf, Tyrone Spong, Ernesto Hoost, list goes on and on and on. I like everything he brings. It's a fabulous story. The bullied kid who was called a monkey, who now uses the nickname to his advantage to prove to the world, to overcome his bullies. I like his fight style. I like his work rate. When he turns it on, he puts the foot down, he can go, he can bang. He's got a 50% KO ratio, 26 fights, 18 wins. I like Romano Buckboard. I really do. 180 centimeters. His height's good. He's built well. Got a good corner. He's from the Netherlands. I like this guy. So Romano goes my fourth seed. That leaves us Dengue Silva, Zora Akopian, and Buakaw. Quick question, guys. Wherever you're listening to this podcast, how are you ranking those three? How do you put them 1, 2, and 3? Okay, my three remaining are Dengue Silva, Buakaw, and Zora. So for my third seed, I'm going to go Buakaw. Now, again, a lot of people could say, you know what? I'm predicting, Jonathan, a lot of people are going to say, whoa, too high, Chiavello, or whoa, too low, Chiavello. Buakaw, 42 years old. Not the Buakaw that he was 20 years ago. Still, though, guys, a Buakaw that has been freaking winning and has been knocking people out and has been fighting high-level opponents. Not as high a level as we're seeing in this K1 Max on July 7, but still bloody high-level opponents. And he is still standing and trading and taking knocks and coming back and wrecking people with his left foot and wrecking people with his hands. And he's never really been out of camp. And as Matt Lucas said a couple of weeks ago, and as Stephen Wright said last week on this podcast, Buakaw never got out of shape, was never the womanizer, never the drinker, never the drug taker, the smoker, etc. He's disciplined. He knows what it takes to win. There's a huge nostalgia component in front of the Japanese who adore him. And I believe it'll be 20 years to the day, 7-7, July 7, since he won the K1 Max for the first time. That is massive. That is like the constellations, the stars maybe aligning again for Buakaw. Third seed, Buakaw. Second seed in the tournament, it's either Zora or Dengue Silva. Dengue Silva, my second seed. This guy has so much going for him, and primarily the height. And not only the height, as I've always said, it's no good being a tall bloke if you don't know how to use it. This guy knows how to use it. He is 190 centimeters tall, folks. 190. There are heavyweights that aren't that tall in K1 history. Mark Hunt wasn't that tall. Andy Hug wasn't that tall. Dengue Silva is the tallest fighter ever in K1 Max. He's got a fabulous record, 43 wins in 47 fights, 24 knockouts. So he's got over 50% KO ratio. He brings the knees on the inside. He brings an exquisite jab. He brings long legs, front kick, leg kicks, hard to get on the inside. He knows how to control opponents. He's very composed, very focused. Big, big fan of Dengue Silva. Second seed. Which means my number one seed for the tournament, Jonathan, is Zora Akopian. If you heard my breakdown of Zora a few weeks ago, you know that I'm full of beans for this guy. He reminds me, and if I'm not the only one saying it, I thought I might have been at the time, but I've since gone on forums and Reddit and chats and seen other people say that Zora Akopian reminds them of Giorgio Petrosian. He just does. He looks like a Petrosian clone. Not as polished and slick yet as Petrosian, but man, even physically, he looks like Petrosian. I mean, if you showed someone a glimpse of Zora fighting for like 30 seconds, and they didn't know, they'd say, is that Petrosian? The body shots are Petrosian-esque. The combinations are Petrosian-esque. The head movement, the footwork, the leg kicks, and the way that he dominated his final 16 fight, man, he made it look like a walk in the freaking park. This guy's good. This guy is really good. He could go all the way. And that's why Zora Akopian is my number one seed. Let us know your thoughts, folks. Once again, Akimov 8, Mujinski 7, Vodonk 6, Koprivlensky 5, Romano Buckboard 4, Buakaw 3, Dengue Silva 2, Zora Akopian 1. Those are my seeds for the K1 Max on July 7.
Up until this point, we've had a chance to speak with pretty much all the fighters who are going to take place in the July 7th tournament. the K1 World Max Final, and this week is no exception. We have a conversation that Michael had with Stoyan Koprivlensky. Let's hear what the two had to talk about.
I'm joined now by the man himself, Stoyan Koprivlensky. Stoyan, thank you so much for your time joining me on K1 Battlecast. Mate, I want to ask, what was your reaction when you received the phone call to replace Ouyang Feng in the K1 Max Final?
My reaction was excitement, especially when I heard that I will fight with Buakaw. I was really happy. Honestly, I was thinking that I should stay ready for the tournament because there are 8 fighters and there is always a chance somebody to get injured during the preparation. So I was kind of ready. And still, when I heard I'm going to fight with Buakaw, it's a great feeling. I was thinking a few years ago, is there any chance someday to fight with him? And that's going to happen on 7 July.
Stoyan, you and Big Mike Passanier will be studying Buakaw closely. Do you think he can knock out Buakaw, or do you think he'll win by decision?
Of course. I believe I can knock him out. I believe in my skills and in my talent. I'm not looking for a knockout, but I'll try some techniques to surprise him with. The winning is the most important for me. It doesn't matter how it comes, by knockout or points, is the most important.
Looking at the opposite side of the draw, Stoyan, it's stacked. Who do you think will get through from that other side of the draw and why?
From the opposite side of the tournament, they're all great fighters. All of them got good chance to get to the final. For sure, good fight is definitely Mushinsky with Akopian. And if I'm in the final and I have to choose who I want to face in the final, definitely that's Mushinsky. Would be a great fight.
On your side of the draw, you'll face either Dengue Silva or Daryl Verdonk in the semifinals. Who do you expect to face out of those two?
Silva is a tall fighter and has a lot longer reach than Verdonk. This fight is really hard to predict. Silva is a very unorthodox fighter and can surprise a Dutchman. But also, he is too open and Verdonk can get him with some punch. I see it like this. If Silva can hold a long distance, he will win. But if Verdonk can go closer, he is much more combinative and can make his points. It's a tactical fight, by my opinion. I don't think much on it. I'm fully focused on my fight with Buakaw.
So, Stoyan, how do you prepare for a fight of this magnitude on shorter notice?
Yeah, it's a short notice, but I was already in shape because I was supposed to fight in K1 in Romania on 13 June, but my fight was cancelled there. The opponent got injured, and then on the next day I heard that there is a chance to fight in the tournament. So I didn't stop training. The only difference is I had to adapt to my trainings to the Buakaw style, but that's fine. I'm ready, sharp and focused.
Would you like to see more legends come back to K1 Max, the likes of maybe Albert Kraus or Giorgio Petrosian, Andy Sauer, you know, those sort of legends?
Yeah, for sure I want to see more legends coming back to K1. It's really nice. It brings back some good feeling about the tournament. Also, a lot more hype. And as we can see, Buakaw is still in shape. And it will be interesting to see him fighting at that age, and even more for me, fighting with him.
Finally, Stoyan, how will you be different to the Stoyan we saw in the final 16 back in March?
I don't want to excuse myself about the loss in March in the 16-man qualification, but before the fight, I got some injuries. I had to recover and also a bit problem with my cutting weight. I had a lot to drop. This also take a lot of energy. And now I'm not making that mistakes. I'm healthy, I'm strong, I'm ready, conditioning is on point, also sharp, fast. So now it's going to be Stoyan Koprivlensky, as you know.
Stoyan Koprivlensky, thank you so much for your time and good luck against the legend Buakaw in the quarterfinals on July 7th.
All right, we have a question from Axel in Long Island, New York. What are your thoughts on K1 using an open scoring system? What do you think, Michael? Is it a good idea?
Axel, great question, my friend. And one which I've always been pro using, the open scoring system. Let me touch on this for people who aren't quite sure. So, you know, fight sports are known for their intense competition and the more than occasional controversy surrounding judges' decisions. Traditional scoring systems keep judges' scorecards hidden until the end of a fight, which can lead to surprises and disputed outcomes. Open scoring, however, where the judges' scores are revealed after each round and revealed both to the entire stadium via a big screen, flashing up the judges' scorecards, and also to the television audience watching live around the world. When they're shown live after each round, it aims to address those controversial issues by providing transparency and allowing fighters to adjust their strategies based on their perceived standing in the fight. The concept of open scoring is not entirely new to combat sports. People think because UFC's trialed it and other organizations have trialed it over recent times that it's new, but you know, K1 was using the open scoring system. I think if I remember correctly, they were using it back in 2008. It may have been 07. I think it was definitely 2008, but way back then, K1 was already using it. I remember commentating the fights back then and not knowing who won a round, I couldn't decide, looking up at the big screens in the arena and seeing red judge, blue judge, this is who they gave it to, and being able to use that information in my commentary to relay that to the fans watching on Access TV or Main Event or wherever they're watching Eurosports around the world, and it would help with the drama of the fights. So that innovation was way ahead of its time in terms of transparency and accountability in judging. It allowed fans, fighters, and as I said, us commentators to follow the progression of the fight in real time, enhancing that drama and that strategic depth of the bouts. From a television and spectator perspective, knowing the scores added a layer of excitement and anticipation to each round. In recent years, several mixed martial arts organizations have begun experimenting with open scoring. The UFC trialed an open scoring in a few select events to gauge its impact. Other promotions such as Octagon MMA have also adopted the open scoring. I believe Octagon just brought it in maybe like a month ago. These trials represent a significant step towards evaluating the feasibility and benefits of open scoring in modern combat sports. So there are arguments on both sides whether to use open scoring or to not. The arguments for open scoring, one of the primary advantages of open scoring is transparency. By revealing scores after each round, open scoring eliminates the uncertainty surrounding judges' decisions and allows fighters to make informed adjustments to their strategies. This transparency, I feel, can potentially reduce controversial decisions and enhance the overall fairness of fight outcomes. Fighters and their teams can adapt their tactics based on whether they're ahead or behind on the scorecards. And this strategic clarity could lead to more dynamic and decisive fighting styles as fighters aim to, secure victories rather than simply score points. That said, the counter argument to that positive is also pretty much the same argument. The open scoring, if a fighter sees that he's ahead, 2-0, 2018 after two, I'm talking K1, 3 rounds, does he coast in the final round? Does he just move around, dance around his opponent, knowing as long as he doesn't get knocked down, he's going to win it, and it makes for a boring final round? You know what? It could. But the flip side of that, we'll flip it again here, is that if his opponent sees he is 2018 down, he goes, okay, I need to knock this fella out to win this contest in the third round. I'm losing 2018. I see it up there on the big screens. You can't freaking miss it. It's there. I've got to knock this guy out, right? So that's where this gets really interesting. On one side of the coin, a fighter who knows he's ahead could park the bus and just grind out a decision and make it a boring fight. But on the flip side of that coin is the other guy goes, I need to knock this guy out. And what if the other guy doesn't know that? Because listen, often we as viewers, spectators, we know that fighter A is winning. We're like, fighter A's got this first two rounds, 10-9 on our unofficial scorecards. But you know what? Fighter B and his corner are so confident, they don't know their fighter's losing. Sometimes they just don't. So sometimes they park the bus, or sometimes they don't know that they need a knockdown or a knockout in that final round to win the fight. But with open scoring, they'll know that. So it presses them to go harder. So there are two sides to that transparency argument. Open scoring promotes accountability among judges. This is a big pro for me. When scores are public, judges are under increased scrutiny from fighters, fans, and the media. This scrutiny can incentivize judges, I guess to say, to adhere more closely to scoring criteria and make more consistent and accurate decisions throughout the fight. Moreover, open scoring allows for post-fight analysis of judges' performances. Patterns of scoring discrepancies or biases, they can be identified. They can be addressed, which can potentially improve the overall judging standards in any fight sport. Now, how many times after, look, you know what? I'll mention UFC in particular because I'm a huge UFC fan. I love watching UFC, but so many fights have been marred by bad judges. Judges who, to me, seem incompetent. And these are judges that, let's get this right here, guys. These judges aren't appointed by the UFC. These judges are appointed by the state athletic commission in each state. So it is the athletic commission who is making the mistakes of appointing these judges who have no idea what they're judging. A lot of the time I've seen boxing judges judging mixed martial arts. I've seen boxing judges when I was living in the States commentating for Access TV, doing like Lion Fight promotions, which was the best Muay Thai promotion going around at the time. I'd see boxing judges on the East Coast judging Muay Thai. These guys had no idea what Muay Thai was. They knew how to judge the boxing proponent of it, but they didn't know that elbows were worth a little more. They didn't know what the hell knees were or a clinch game was, or kicks for that matter. How can these people judge Muay Thai? How can boxing judges judge kickboxing, right? If you have an open scoring system, it shows us, whoa, hey, you know what? Judge Jonathan Scheer. Sorry, Jonathan needed a name.
It's okay, Michael. I think it's well known to the public that I know nothing about anything. So yes, please continue.
Judge Jonathan Scheer is way off. What the hell is this guy thinking? He's just given Fighter A 10-9. Are you kidding, Jonathan? Fighter A 10-9? That was Fighter B's round all the way. So all of a sudden, we know that the weak point in the judging here is Jonathan Scheer, the judge.
You're just getting that now?
Right? We can call him out. We can make him accountable. I like this accountability. I don't like that these judges, very often their names, their identities aren't revealed until after the fact when there's nothing we can do about it. If they know that their scorecards are going to be flashed up on the screen in the arena for the fighters to see, at home for the viewers to see, they will be held to higher standards of judging, which I think is great. Let's also look from a spectator's perspective. Open scoring can enhance the viewing experience. In this modern day and age of watching live sports on TV, we are statistics, we are drama, we are storytelling. We love any insight we can possibly get into how the sports event we are watching is going down. You watch a football match. Which teams had more possession? Which teams had shots on goal? Which teams had more shots on target or off target? Which teams had more offsides, etc.? We want all that information. We ingest all that information. Give us more for the fight sports. Let us be more emotionally attached. Let us know, oh my goodness, Fighter A, 2-3 judges have got this guy ahead with one round to go. My God, Fighter B, you've got to go for it, mate. You've got to go for broke. I want to feel that passion. Fans can follow the progression of the fight more closely. Understanding the dynamics of scoring and appreciating these strategic nuances unfolding in the ring or, you know, if it's mixed martial arts in the cage. This real-time information, because that's what it is, real-time information can add excitement and suspense to each round because fans will anticipate how fighters will respond to their scores. I also think open scoring prevents corruption. I really do. You've got a promoter who's slightly biased, who has interest in one particular fighter. Now you know, I'm saying at more regional shows this can happen. Okay, you've got a promoter who's a trainer, whose guy's in the main event, and maybe the main event is a close contest. It's gone down to the judge's decision. And what's to say the promoter hasn't gotten in the judge's ears and these judges weren't appointed by an athletic commission, were appointed by him. And he's like, hey, you know what? score to my boy or else. So they give it to his boy. But if the scorecards were shown, if it was open scoring throughout the bout, you can't do the old, hey, give it to my boy or else, because the scorecards are right there on the screen, aren't they? And that crowd will boo you out of the arena. They will throw rotten tomatoes at you if you dare give the wrong score during a fight. So there is a lot to be said for open scoring. Again, there is always a flip side to every coin. You can argue that open scoring alters the dynamics of fights in unintended ways. For example, fighters who know they're ahead on the scorecards might become, as I said, overly cautious in the later rounds to preserve their lead. A cautious approach, parking the bus, could lead to less aggressive and potentially less entertaining fights, which are crucial, of course, for maintaining fan interest and the financial viability of promotions like K1. Another concern is the potential for external pressure to influence judges' decisions. In sports like, well, let's say tennis, where officials face scrutiny and criticism from crowds and players, open scoring could expose judges in K1 to similar pressures. This external influence may compromise the judges' impartiality and undermine the integrity of scoring decisions. But then again, there's an old saying we have here in Australia with our politicians, keep the bastards honest, right? Keep the bastards honest. I believe it applies to scoring in fight sports. Keep the bastards honest. How can you keep the bastards honest if you can't see the bastards' scorecards? Right? How do you know? You can't keep them honest. Flash their scorecards. Make them accountable for their scores. Keep the bastards honest. So, Axel, this is a really good question. I thank you for asking it. It's something that I have been saying for years. And once again, K1 was an innovator back in the day. I'm sorry I can't remember the exact year they started using it in K1, but I loved it when they did. I really did. I clearly remember commentating many a time with Mike Kogan and Ray Sefo and Ernesto Hoost and us looking up the screens between rounds, and we'd even have arguments on the air. It would all add to the drama because, you know, let's say there was a fight between Masato and Buakaw and Mike Kogan gave that round to Masato. I gave the round to Buakaw. Then the judges' scorecards flashed up and they gave it to Buakaw. And I'd be like, hey, Mikey, there you go. You see, even the judges agree with me. And Kogan then would add his argument. Well, you know, I disagree with you and the judges because I think Masato won it because of this. It's the same sort of arguments you have as a fan sitting at home in your armchair with your mates watching K1 on TV live worldwide. We want that fan engagement. And I also, again, like that the fighters know where they stand in a fight. Fighters, trainers, coaches, corner, judges, promoters, everybody knows everything is transparent. We know the scorecards of other sports, right? You don't watch a tennis match, football match, and wonder who the hell's winning. You watch it and you know who's winning. Let's know who's winning along the way in mixed martial arts, in K1, in Muay Thai, in all fight sports. Axel, great, great question, mate. Really good. My thoughts on using an open scoring system, I am all for it. Well, that's it. Another episode of K1 Battlecast in the books. Jonathan, another stacked episode because there is just so much to talk about at the moment. It's all happening in the wild world of K1. And once again, Saturday night from Sarajevo, it is the K1 World Grand Prix qualifier. One man will punch his ticket to December 14, the K1 World Grand Prix final. Join myself and Sina Karimian live and worldwide on pay-per-view. And Jonathan, the week after, the one we've been looking out for, K1 Max Finals, finally goes down. I am psyched, brother.
I am so psyched too, man. It's been 14 years in the waiting. It's going to be great.
Well, folks, we'll catch you next week for another episode of K1 Battlecast. But again, make sure you join me on Saturday night for the worldwide pay-per-view of K1 Sarajevo.
All the information about the pay-per-view is going to be in the show notes. Wherever you are, we hope you have a wonderful week. And we'll see you next time on K1 Battlecast.